This week's Labyrinth Library podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/lablib. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. How are you doing this week? I got to be a little bit quiet and a little bit quick this evening because the boyfriend's feeling sick. He's got a cold. He's holed up in the next room under lots of blankets, under strict orders not to allow the cat in, much to the cat's consternation. So I hope that you're doing well this week. Things here are going great. My drama class had their performance, the very abridged edition of Midsummer Night's Dream. And it was outstanding. I was very, very pleased with how they did. So it was a good week, all told. Now we're into the last week of classes. Next week is final exams. Yay! All right, so why don't we jump in? Like I said, don't have a lot of time this week. So let's jump into this week's book. Now, it is the last Thursday, which means it's time to get back into our end-of-the-month series. And I decided to get into Wheel of Time. Finally! I know you've been waiting for this. I've been waiting for it, too. Now, last week I told you, or I asked you, what the acronym RAFO stands for. Got a correct answer from Paul out in Spain, who correctly told me that RAFO means read and find out, which was Jordan's standard response to a lot of fans when they would ask him pesky questions about the book, like what's going to happen to this character, and when are we going to see that, and who killed this person. He would always say read and find out. And it was his standard answer, and my brother pointed me to a funny quote where he would automatically answer that, even when his wife would say, where do you want to go for dinner? And then she'd smack him. So he wanted to help build up the suspense for future books, I'm sure, but I suspect, and I have no evidence to support this right now, that he also used that answer to buy himself time for the things that even he didn't know just yet. He claimed to have an iron-fisted control over this series, but I don't think any writer ever really does, so read and find out. There we go. Why don't we get into this week's book? It is Book Zero, New Spring. And it's called Book Zero because it takes place before the proper Book One. And in my opinion, if you are new to the Wheel of Time series, first of all, what took you so long? Secondly, don't start with this book. I mean, okay, like I said, it is Book Zero. It takes place about 20 years before the events of the first book, which is Eye of the World. And it provides an enormous amount of backstory which a reader would only otherwise get much later on. I mean, if you read this and then you go on to Eye of the World, everything that happens in the first few chapters is so much more heavily weighted. In the whole book, in fact, things that Moraine says and does, knowing what we know about her, are completely different. I'm not saying they're better or they're worse, they're just different. And maybe because I treasure my experiences with books, I can't imagine the story being as good if we knew so much. So the Wheel of Time, to fill you in, is an immense example of epic fantasy. The first book was published in 1990, and it still hasn't found its way to a conclusion. However, the end is in sight. Following the death of the author, Robert Jordan, the series is being finished by Brandon Sanderson, and the final volume is expected to come out in the beginning of 2013. Still, that is a long, long time for the faithful to stick with a series. More than a few people have dropped out halfway through, and honestly, I can't blame them. The series so far consists of nearly 3.8 million words. It's almost five Bibles. More than 11,000 pages and 635 chapters. Thank you very much, Wikipedia. There are more characters than I think anyone can accurately count. Over 3,000 years of history, prophecies, politics, religion, love, hate, magic, mystery, all that good stuff. And it is not for the faint of heart. But if you stick with it, the series does pay off. It'll take up a big piece of real estate in your head that you just keep coming back to. Questions, wonders, worries. It's no surprise that a fan community has built up around this series that has devoted itself to knowing and cataloging every single detail, right down to, the chapter icons and their relationships to the content of that chapter. If you're not wondering what Ajah you would be in by the end of the first book, then you need to slow down and enjoy it a little bit because something's not sinking in. Now, if I sound a little bit evangelistic, then it's because I am. I mean, I've devoted nearly two-thirds of my life as a reader to this series, sticking it out, even when other readers got bored or frustrated, and I want other people to love it as well. That is, after all, the reason I do these reviews, to share the books that I love. So, anyway, on to this actual book. As I said, it is a prequel to the series proper. Its first incarnation was as a short story in the Legends collection back in 1999, and it was published as a novel between books 10 and 11 of the series proper. It focuses on two of the prime movers of the early books, Moraine de Modred, Aes Sedai of the Blue Aja, and Lan Mandragoran, the uncrowned king of Malkier, a land that was swallowed by the Blight when he was but an infant. See, just that sentence right there requires pages and pages of backstory by themselves if I wanted to try and explain them properly. Moraine and her best friend Siwan are accepted in the White Tower, which is the home of the Aes Sedai. And the Aes Sedai are a society of women who can channel a powerful force called Sidar, which, for all intents and purposes, is magic. For thousands of years, the Aes Sedai have used their powers to try and protect the world. Soon, Moraine and Siwan will become full-fledged Aes Sedai with all the power and responsibility that involves. At the moment, though, that looks like taking part in a great war. The mysterious Aiel have come out of their desert to attack and destroy everything they can find, and nobody knows why. The war has come to the very shores of Tarvalon itself, the island home of the White Tower. Amidst all of this, Gitarra Maroso, an Aes Sedai of high rank and power, has a foretelling, and that's with a capital F. The dragon is reborn. He who broke the world has come again, and the last battle is upon us. She foretells the end of the world, and that foretelling kills her. With that, a search begins for the boy who would one day grow up to be the dragon, and Moraine and Siwan are at the forefront of that search. But they are not alone. The Amyrlin Seat, leader of all Aes Sedai, sent out her best to find the boy, but unknown to them, the Black Aja, Aes Sedai dedicated to the primacy of the Dark One, and I really shouldn't have to tell you who that is, are also looking for the Dragon Reborn. Without him, their master will emerge from his prison and remake the world in his own dark image. It is up to Moraine and Siwan to find the boy before the Black Aja do, and not get themselves killed in the process. So, are you confused yet? I think I would be if I hadn't read the series prior to the book. I mean, damn near everything I've said up there requires a ton of explanation and backstory, just pages and pages and pages, which is, of course, what the whole series is about. When this novel was released, keep in mind, readers of Wheel of Time had already gone through 10 books, so there wasn't a lot of pressure on Jordan to explain everything in absolute detail. For a devoted fan, it's an excellent nugget of series history, and an illuminating look at some of the most important and mysterious characters in the series. For a new reader, I imagine it's kind of confusing. I mean, this book gives us a good, strong look at the White Tower and the life inside it, the intricacies of the Ajahs, the trials that are required of novices and accepted, and the history that surrounds all of it. It's a lot of information, but it's wrapped inside a really good story, so you don't really mind. I mean, well, I don't really mind. Very little of this was new to me. In all honesty, though, I could be wrong. I first read this with years of the series under my belt, and I breezed through these concepts and references that I didn't need explained to me. But even if it is accessible to the new reader, I still recommend holding off until you get to a point where you're pretty sure you know everything you need to know. Why? Well, because it's not how the series was written. I'm a stickler for this kind of thing. A new reader cracking open Eye of the World for the first time knows nothing, which puts you pretty much at the same level as the series protagonist, Rand Althor. With Rand, you learn about the world at a steady pace. It's a little bit overwhelming, of course, but it's manageable. And what's more, it is interesting. This world, which is nicknamed Randland by fans, I don't think the whole continent has a proper name except the Western country or something, but this world has an intricate and mysterious history, as do many of the characters. To have so much of that information before starting the series seems to me like, I don't know, it feels like cheating almost. I mean, if I could, I would remove my memory of the rest of the series and read this one as if it were all new. I would love to come at this story from a different angle, from nothing, and then compare the two experiences, kind of like with Ender's Game and Ender's Shadow. Alas, I cannot. So I go into this book not knowing what I'm not supposed to know. So if you're new to the series, it is, of course, ultimately up to you. I think, holding off on this book will make it better, but I can't tell you what to do, of course. All I know is that it's where I start when I reread the series, and it's not a bad beginning. And I know that I started the series a long, long time before this book came out, and that was fine, too. So let me give you a quote. This is the prophecy from Guitarra Moroso from New Spring. She says, and I would yell, but again, the boyfriend's sleeping in the other room. She says, "He is born again. I feel him. The dragon takes his first breath on the slope of Dragon Mount. He is coming. He is coming. Light, help us. Light, help the world. He lies in the snow and cries like the thunder. He burns like the sun." And at that point, she dropped dead. So that is New Spring, Wheel of Time, Book Zero. Like I said, every time I reread the series, and I'm going to have to reread it again when the new one comes out, I always start here, but I've had that experience behind me. So, again, I don't know what it's like. I wish I knew. I wish I could go back and start afresh, start anew, and read it again, but I cannot. Someday we'll have that technology available to us. Anyway, I hope you enjoy that. If you do enjoy it, by the way, but you haven't the time to sit and leaf through dusty old Deadry pages, there is, of course, an audio version. You can go over to audible.com. They have a very nice, they have the whole collection of Wheel of Time, just about, I think, and they do indeed have New Spring. It is narrated by Kate Redding and Michael Kramer, and just recently Audible started this a new kind of series view of their books, so you can leaf through books. You don't have to try and hunt down what the next book is, you know, when you're finished. You can just go right to the next one. So they're getting much, much better at organizing their series. If you go to audibletrial.com/lablib, again, that is audibletrial.com/lablib, you can get a free trial membership to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And with that free trial membership, you get a free digital book, and you can make it New Spring and start from there, or you can make it Eye of the World, which we'll talk about next month, and start from there, or any one of their many, many, many fine books. So that is audibletrial.com/lablib. Support the podcast. Get yourself a good book. Okay. Next week, we're going to stick with fantasy, and we're going to stick with a series, but it's not a series that I've done sort of end-of-month things, because it's not a traditional series in the sense that you have to start at book one and continue to book, you know, 35. It is, of course, our old favorite, our old friend, the one that I have a lot of these reviews on deck, so I like to sprinkle them in from time to time. It is, in fact, Terry Pratchett. And it is appropriate that we're doing this review right around Oscar season. That's your clue. We're doing this review around Oscar season. Okay. At least I think it's Oscar season. I don't really pay attention to these things. Whatever. Anyway, if it were Oscar season, that's when we do it. And if it is, then we are. I have ceased to make sense. All right. I hope that you have a good week. I hope you enjoy yourself. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And I will talk to you all again next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.